kind of killed Shan Alariel. You did what? Kelsier asked, as Sazed tisked quietly, leaving the small cheek cut alone, as he undid the bandage on her arm. Vin flinched slightly at Sazed's ministrations. She was mistborn. We fought. I won. You killed a fully trained mistborn? Kelsier thought with shock. You've practiced for barely 8 months. Master Hammond, Sazed requested, would you fetch my healer's bag? Ham nodded, rising.
You might want to grab her something to wear, too, Kelsier suggested. I think poor Spook's about to have a heart attack.
What's wrong with this? Vin asked, nodding toward her clothing. It's not that much more revealing than some of the thief's clothing I've worn.
Those are undergarments, Vin, Doxson said.
So?
It's the principle of the matter, Doxson said. Young ladies do not run around in their undergarments, no matter how much those undergarments may resemble regular clothing.
Vin shrugged, sitting as Sazed held a bandage to her arm. She seemed exhausted, and not just from the fighting.
What else happened at that party?
Where did you fight the Alarial woman? Kelsier asked.
Outside Keep Venture, Vin said, looking down. I think some of the guards spotted me. Some of the nobles might have too, I'm not certain.
That's going to be trouble, Doxson said, sighing. Of course, that cheek wound is going to be pretty obvious, even with makeup.
Honestly, you allomancers, don't you ever worry about what you're going to look like the day after you get into one of these fights?
I was kind of focused on staying alive, Dox, Vin said.
He's just complaining because he's worried about you, Kelsier said as Ham returned with the bag. That's what he does.
Both wounds will require immediate stitching, mistress, Sazed said. The one on your arm hit the bone, I think.
Vin nodded, and Sazed rubbed her arm with a numbing agent, then began to work. She bore it without much visible discomfort, though she obviously had her pewter flared.
She looks so exhausted, Kelsier thought. She was such a frail-looking thing, mostly just arms and legs.
Hammond put a cloak around her shoulders, but she appeared too tired to care.
And I brought her into this.
Of course, she should know better than to get herself into this kind of trouble. Eventually, Sazed finished his efficient sewing, then tied a new bandage around the arm wound. He moved on to the cheek.
Why did you fight a mistborn? Kelsier asked sternly. You should have run. Didn't you learn anything from your battle with the Inquisitors?
I couldn't get away without turning my back on her, Vin said. Besides, she had more atium than me. If I hadn't attacked, she would have chased me down. I had to strike while we were equally matched.
But how did you get into this in the first place? Kelsier demanded. Did she attack you?
Vin glanced down at her feet.
I attacked first.
Why? Kelsier asked.
Vin sat for a moment, Sazed working on her cheek.
She was going to kill Elend, she finally said.
Kelsier exhaled in exasperation.
Elend Venture? You risked your life, risked the plan and our lives for that fool of a boy?
Vin looked up, glaring at him.
Yes.
What's wrong with you, girl? Kelsier asked. Elend Venture isn't worth this.
She stood angrily, Sazed backing away, the cloak falling to the floor.
He's a good man.
He's a nobleman.
So are you,
Vin snapped. She waved a frustrated arm toward the kitchen and the crew.
What do you think this is, Kelsier? The life of a ska? What do any of you know about ska? Aristocratic suits, stalking your enemies in the night, full meals and nightcaps around the table with your friends? That's not the life of a ska!
She took a step forward, glaring at Kelsier. He blinked in surprise at the outburst.
What do you know about them, Kelsier? She asked. When's the last time you slept in an alley, shivering in the cold rain, listening to the beggar next to you cough with a sickness you knew would kill him? When's the last time you had to lay awake at night terrified that one of the men in your crew would try to rape you? Have you ever knelt, starving, wishing you had the courage to knife the crew member beside you just so you could take his crust of bread? Have you ever cowered before your brother as he beat you, all the time feeling thankful because at least you had someone who paid attention to you?
She fell silent, puffing slightly, the crew members staring at her.
Don't talk to me about noblemen, Vin said, and don't say things about people you don't know. You're no ska. You're just noblemen without titles.
She turned, stalking from the room. Kelsier watched her go, shocked, hearing her footsteps on the stairs. He stood, dumbfounded, feeling a surprising flush of ashamed guilt. And for once found himself without anything to say. Vin didn't go to her room. She climbed to the roof, where the mists curled in the quiet, unlit night. She sat down in the corner, the rough stone lip of the flat rooftop against her nearly bare back, wood beneath her. She was cold, but she didn't care. Her arm hurt a bit, but it was mostly numb. She didn't feel nearly numb enough herself. She crossed her arms, huddling down, watching the mists. She didn't know what to think, let alone what to feel. She shouldn't have exploded at Kelsier, but everything that had happened, the fight, Ellen's betrayal, it just left her feeling frustrated. She needed to be angry at someone.
You should just be angry at yourself, Reen's voice whispered. You're the one who let them get close. Now they're all just going to leave you.
She couldn't make it stop hurting. She could only sit and shiver as the tears fell, wondering how everything had collapsed so quickly. The trap door to the rooftop opened with a quiet creak, and Kelsier's head appeared.
Oh, Lord Ruler, I don't want to face him now.
She tried to wipe away her tears, but she only succeeded in aggravating the freshly stitched wound on her cheek. Kelsier closed the trap door behind him, then stood, so tall and proud, staring up at the mists.
He didn't deserve the things I said. None of them did.
Watching the mists is comforting, isn't it? Kelsier asked. Vin nodded. Was it I once told you? The mists protect you. They give you power. They hide you. He looked down. Then he walked over and crouched before her, holding out a cloak. There are some things you can't hide from, Vin. I know. I've tried. She accepted the cloak, then wrapped it around her shoulders. What happened tonight? He asked. What really happened?
Ellen told me that he didn't want to be with me anymore.
Ah, Kelsier said, moving over to sit beside her. Was this before or after you killed his former fiancée?
Before,
Vin said. And you still protected him? Vin nodded, sniffling quietly.
I know. I'm an idiot.
No more than the rest of us, Kelsier said with a sigh. He looked up into the mists. I loved Mare too, even after she betrayed me. Nothing could change how I felt.
And that's why it hurts so much,
Vin said, remembering what Kelsier had said before.
I think I finally understand.
You don't stop loving someone just because they hurt you, he said. It would certainly make things easier if you did. She started to sniffle again, and he put a fatherly arm around her. She pulled close, trying to use his warmth to push away the pain.
I loved him, Kelsier,
she whispered. Ellen? I know.
No, not Ellen,
Vin said.
Reen. He beat me over and over and over. He swore at me. He yelled at me. He told me he'd betray me. Every day I thought about how much I hated him. And I loved him. I still do. It hurts so much to think that he's gone, even though he always told me he would leave.
Oh, child, Kelsier said, pulling her close. I'm sorry.
Everyone leaves me, she whispered. I can barely remember my mother. She tried to kill me, you know. She heard voices in her head, and they made her kill my baby sister. She was probably going to kill me next, but Reen stopped her. Either way, she left me. After that, I clung to Reen. He left, too. I love Ellen, but he doesn't want me anymore.
She looked up at Kelsier.
When are you going to go? When will you leave me?
Kelsier looked sorrowful. Then I don't know. This job, the plan.
She searched his eyes, looking for the secrets therein.
What are you hiding from me, Kelsier? Something that dangerous?
She wiped her eyes again, pulling away from him, feeling foolish. He looked down, shaking his head.
Look, now you got blood all over my nice, dirty, pretend informant's clothing.
Vin smiled.
At least some of it is noble blood. I got Shan pretty good.
Kelsier chuckled.
You're probably right about me, you know. I don't give the nobility much of a chance, do I?
Vin flushed.
Kelsier, I shouldn't have said those things. You're good people. And this plan of yours... Well, I realize what you're trying to do for the Ska.
No, Vin, Kelsier said, shaking his head. What you said was true. We're not really Ska.
But that's good, Vin said. If you were regular Ska, you wouldn't have the experience or courage to plan something like this.
They might lack experience, Kelsier said, but not courage. Our army lost, true, but they were willing, with minimal training, to charge a superior force. No, the Ska don't lack courage, just opportunity.
Then it's your position as half Ska, half nobleman that has given you opportunity, Kelsier. And you've chosen to use that opportunity to help your Ska half. That makes you worthy of being a Ska if anything does.
Kelsier smiled.
Worthy to be a Ska. I like the sound of that. Regardless, perhaps I need to spend a little less time worrying about which noblemen to kill and a little more time worrying about which peasants to help.
Vin nodded, pulling the cloak close as she stared up into the mists.
They protect us, give us power, hide us.
She hadn't felt like she needed to hide in a long time. But now, after the things she'd said below, she almost wished that she could just blow away like a wisp of mist.
I need to tell him. It could mean the plan's success or failure.
She took a deep breath.
House Venture has a weakness, Kelsier.
He perked up.
It does?
Vin nodded.
Atium. They make certain the metal is harvested and delivered. It's the source of their wealth.
Kelsier paused for a moment.
Of course. That's how they can pay the taxes. That's why they're so powerful. He would need someone to handle things for him.
Kelsier?
Vin asked. He looked back at her.
Don't do anything unless you have to, all right?
Kelsier frowned.
I don't know that I can promise anything, Vin. I'll try and think of another way, but as things stand now, Venture has to fall.
I understand.
I'm glad you told me, though.
She nodded.
And now I've betrayed him, too.
There was a peace in knowing, however, that she hadn't done it out of spite. Kelsier was right. House Venture was a power that needed to be toppled. Oddly, her mention of the house seemed to bother Kelsier more than it did her. He sat, staring into the mists, strangely melancholy. He reached down, absently scratching his arm.
The scars, Vin thought.
It isn't House Venture he's thinking about. It's the pits. Her.
Kelsier? She said. Yes, his eyes still looking a bit absent as he watched the mists.
I don't think that Mare betrayed you.
He smiled. I'm glad you think that way.
No, I really mean it, Vin said. The Inquisitors were waiting for you when you got to the center of the palace, right?
Kelsier nodded.
They were waiting for us, too.
Kelsier shook his head. You and I fought some guards, made some noise. When Mare and I went in, we were quiet. We'd planned for a year. We were stealthy, secretive, and very careful. Someone set a trap for us.
Mare was an Allomancer, right? Vin asked. They could have just sensed you coming.
Kelsier shook his head. We had a smoker with us. Red was his name. The Inquisitors killed him straight off. I've wondered if he was the traitor, but that just doesn't work. Red didn't even know about the infiltration until that night, when we went and got him. Only Mare knew enough. Dates, times, objectives to have betrayed us. Besides, there's the Lord Ruler's comment. You didn't see him, Vin, smiling as he thanked Mare. There was honesty in his eyes. They say the Lord Ruler doesn't lie. Why would he need to? Vin sat quietly for a moment, considering what he'd said.
Kelsier, she said slowly, I think that Inquisitors can sense our allomancy even when we're burning copper.
Impossible.
I did tonight. I punctured Shan's copper cloud to locate her and the other assassins. That's how I got to Elend in time.
Kelsier frowned. You've got to be mistaken.
It happened before, too, Vin said. I can feel the Lord Ruler's touch on my emotions, even when I'm burning copper. And I swear that when I was hiding from that Inquisitor who was hunting me, he found me when he shouldn't have been able to. Kelsier, what if it's possible? What if hiding yourself by smoking isn't just a simple matter of whether or not your copper is on? What if it just depends on how strong you are?
Kelsier sat thoughtfully. It could be possible, I suppose.
Then Mare wouldn't have had to betray you, Vin said eagerly. Inquisitors are extremely powerful. The ones who were waiting for you, maybe they just felt you burning metals. They knew that an Allomancer was trying to sneak into the palace. Then the Lord Ruler thanked her because she was the one who gave you away. She was the Allomancer burning tin that led them to you.
Kelsier's face took on a troubled expression. He turned, sitting himself so he was directly in front of her. Do it now, then. Tell me what metal I'm burning. Vin closed her eyes, flaring bronze, listening, feeling as Marsh had taught her. She remembered her solitary trainings, time spent focusing on the waves Breeze, Ham, or Spook gave off for her. She tried to pick out the fuzzing rhythm of Allomancy. Tried to... For a moment she thought she felt something. Something very strange. A slow pulsing, like a distant drum, unlike any Allomantic rhythm she'd felt before. But it wasn't coming from Kelsier. It was distant, far away. She focused harder, trying to pick out the direction it was coming from. But suddenly, as she focused harder, something else drew her attention. A more familiar rhythm, coming from Kelsier. It was faint, difficult to feel over the pulsing of her own heartbeat. It was a bold beat and quick. She opened her eyes.
Pewter! You're burning pewter!
Kelsier blinked in surprise. Impossible, he whispered. Again! She closed her eyes.
Tin, she said after a moment. Now steel, you changed as soon as I spoke.
Bloody hell!
I was right, Vin said eagerly. You can feel allomantic pulses through copper. They're quiet, but I guess you just have to focus hard enough to...
Vin, Kelsier interrupted. Don't you think allomancers have tried this before? You don't think that after 1,000 years' time someone would have noticed that you could pierce a copper cloud? I've even tried it.
I focused for hours on my master trying to sense something through his copper cloud.
But, Vin said, but why?
It must have to do with strength, like you said. Inquisitors can push and pull harder than any regular Mistborn. Perhaps they're so strong that they can overwhelm someone else's metal.
But, Kelsier, Vin said quietly, I'm not an Inquisitor.
But you're strong, he said. Stronger than you have any right to be. You killed a full Mistborn tonight.
By luck, Vin said, face flushing. I just tricked her.
Allomancy is nothing but tricks, Vin. No, there's something special about you. I noticed it on that first day when you shrugged off my attempts to push and pull your emotions. She flushed.
It can't be that, Kelsier. Maybe I've just practiced with bronze more than you. I don't know, I just...
Vin, Kelsier said, you're still too self-effacing. You're good at this, that much is obvious. If that's why you can see through copper clouds, well, I don't know. But learn to take a little pride in yourself, kid. If there's anything I can teach you, it's how to be self-confident. Vin smiled. Come on, he said, standing and holding out a hand to help her up. Sazed is going to fret all night if you don't let him finish stitching that cheek wound, and Ham's dying to hear about your battle. Good job leaving Shan's body back at Keep Venture, by the way. When House Illyrial hears that she was found dead on Venture property... Vin allowed him to pull her up, but she glanced toward the trap door apprehensively.
I don't know if I want to go down yet, Kelsier. How can I face them?
Kelsier laughed. Oh, don't worry. If you didn't say some stupid things every once in a while, you certainly wouldn't fit in with this group. Come on. Vin hesitated, then led him lead her back down to the warmth of the kitchen.
Elland, how can you read at times like this? Jastis asked.
Elland looked up from his book.
It calms me.
Jastis raised an eyebrow. The young Lee Cal sat impatiently in the coach, tapping his fingers on the armrest. The window shades were drawn, partially to hide the light of Elland's reading lantern, partially to keep out the mists. Though Elland would never admit it, the swirling fog made him just a bit nervous. Noblemen weren't supposed to be afraid of such things, but that didn't change the fact that the deep, collisionous mist was just plain creepy.
"Your father is going to be livid when you get back," Jastis noted, still tapping the armrest.
Elland shrugged, though this comment did make him a little bit nervous. Not because of his father, but because of what had happened this night. Some allomancers had apparently been spying on Elland's meeting with his friends. What information had they gathered? Did they know about the books he'd read? Fortunately, one of them had tripped, falling through Ellen's skylight. After that, it had been confusion and chaos, soldiers and ballgoers running about in a semi-panic. Ellen's first thought had been for the books, the dangerous ones, the ones that if the obligators found he possessed, could get him into serious trouble. So in the confusion, he'd dumped them all in a bag and followed Jastis down to the palace side exit. Grabbing a carriage and sneaking out of the palace grounds had been an extreme move, perhaps, but it had been ridiculously easy. With the number of carriages fleeing the Venture grounds, not a single person had paused to notice that Elland himself was in the carriage with Jastis.
"It's probably all died down by now," Elland told himself. "People will realize that House Venture wasn't trying to attack them, and that there wasn't really any danger. Just some spies who got careless."
He should have returned by now. However, his convenient absence from the palace gave him a perfect excuse to check on another group of spies. And this time, Elland himself had sent them. A sudden knock on the door made Jastis jump, and Elland closed his book, then opened the carriage door. Felt, one of the House Venture chief spies, climbed into the carriage, nodding his hawkish, mustached face respectfully to Elland, then Jastis.
"Well?"
Jastis asked. Felt sat down with the keen litheness of his kind.
"The building is ostensibly a woodcrafter's shop, my lord. One of my men has heard of the place. It's run by one Master Cladent, a Ska carpenter of no small skill.
Ellen frowned. Why did Valette's steward come here?
We think that the shop is a front, my lord, Felt said. We've been observing it ever since the steward led us here, as you ordered. However, we've had to be very careful. There are several watch nests hidden on its roof and top floors.
Ellen frowned. An odd precaution for a simple craftsman's shop, I should think. Felt nodded.
That's not the half of it, my lord. We managed to sneak one of our best men up to the building itself. We don't think he was spotted, but he had a remarkably difficult time hearing what's going on inside. The windows are sealed and stuffed to keep in sound.
Another odd precaution, Ellen thought. What do you think it means? He asked Felt.
It's got to be an underground hideout, my lord, Felt said, and a good one. If we hadn't been watching carefully and been certain what to look for, we would never have noticed the signs. My guess is that the men inside, even the terrace men, are members of a ska thieving crew. A very well-funded and skilled one.
A ska thieving crew? Jastis asked. And Lady Valette, too?
Likely, my lord, Felt said.
Ellen paused. A ska thieving crew, he said, stunned. Why would they send one of their members to balls? To perform a scam of some sort, perhaps?
My lord, Felt asked, do you want us to break in? I've got enough men to take their entire crew.
No, Ellen said. Call your men back, and tell no one of what you've seen this night.
Yes, my lord, Felt said, climbing out of the coach.
Lord Ruler, Jastis said as the carriage door closed. No wonder she didn't seem like a regular noblewoman. It wasn't her rural upbringing. She's just a thief.
Ellen nodded, thoughtful, not certain what to think.
You owe me an apology, Jastis said. I was right about her, eh?
Perhaps, Ellen said. But, in a way, you were wrong about her, too. She wasn't trying to spy on me. She was just trying to rob me.
So?
I need to think about this, Ellen said, reaching out and knocking for the carriage to start moving.
He sat back as the coach began to roll back toward Keep Venture.
Valette wasn't the person that she'd said she was. However, he'd already prepared himself for that news. Not only had Jasty's words about her made him suspicious, Valette herself hadn't denied Ellen's accusations earlier in the night. It was obvious. She had been lying to him, playing a part. He should have been furious. He realized this, logically, and a piece of him did ache of betrayal. But oddly, the primary emotion he felt was one of relief.
What? Jastis asked, studying Ellen with a frown.
Ellen shook his head. You've had me worrying over this for days, Jastis. I felt so sick that I could barely function, all because I thought that Valette was a traitor.
But she is. Ellen, she's probably trying to scam you.
Yes, Ellen said, but at least she probably isn't a spy for another house. In the face of all the intrigue, politics, and backbiting that has been going on lately, something as simple as a robbery feels slightly refreshing.
But it's only money, Jastis. Money is kind of important to some of us, Ellen.
Not as important as Valette. That poor girl. All this time she must have been worrying about the scam she would have to pull on me.
Jastis sat for a moment, then he finally shook his head. Ellen, only you would be relieved to find out that someone was trying to steal from you. Need I remind you that the girl has been lying this entire time? You might have grown attached to her, but I doubt her own feelings are genuine.
You may be right, Ellen admitted, but I don't know, Jastis. I feel like I know this girl. Her emotions, they just seem too real, too honest to be false.
Doubtful, Jastis said.
Ellen shook his head.
We don't have enough information to judge her yet. Felt thinks she's a thief, but there have to be other reasons a group like that would send someone to balls. Maybe she's just an informant. Or maybe she is a thief, but not one who ever intended to rob me. She spent an awful lot of time mixing with the other nobility. Why would she do that if I was her target? In fact, she spent relatively little time with me, and she never plied me for gifts. He paused, imagining his meeting Valette as a pleasant accident, an event that had thrown a terrible twist into both of their lives. He smiled, then shook his head. No, Jastis, there's more here than we're seeing. Something about her still doesn't make sense.
I suppose, Al, Jastis said, frowning.
Elland sat upright, a sudden thought occurring to him, a thought that made his speculations about Valette's motivation seem far less important.
Jastis, he said. She's Ska.
And?
And she fooled me. Fooled us both. She acted the part of an aristocrat almost perfectly.
An inexperienced aristocrat, perhaps.
I had a real Ska thief with me, Ellen said. Think of the questions I could have asked her.
Questions? What kind of questions?
Questions about being Ska, Ellen said.
That's not the point.
Jastis, she fooled us.
If we can't tell the difference between a Ska and a noblewoman, that means that the Ska can't be very different from us. And if they're not that different from us, what right do we have treating them as we do?
Jastis shrugged. Ellen, I don't think you're looking at this in perspective. We're in the middle of a house war.
Ellen nodded distractedly.
I was so hard on her this evening. Too hard?
He had wanted her to believe, totally and completely, that he didn't want anything more to do with her. Part of that had been genuine, for his own worries had convinced him that she couldn't be trusted. And she couldn't be. Not at the moment. Either way, he'd wanted her to leave the city. He'd thought that the best thing to do was break off the relationship until the house war was through.
But assuming she's really not a noblewoman, then there's no reason for her to leave.
Elland, Jastis asked, are you even paying attention to me?
Elland looked up.
I think I did something wrong tonight. I wanted to get Valette out of Luthadel. But now I think I hurt her for no reason.
Bloody hell, Elland, Jastis said. Allomancers were listening to our conference this night. Do you realize what could have happened? What if they'd decided to kill us rather than just spy on us?
Ah, yes, you're right, Elland said with a distracted nod. It's best if Valette leaves anyway. Anyone close to me will be in danger during the days to come.
Jastis paused, his annoyance deepening, then he finally laughed.
You're hopeless.
I try my best, Elland said. But seriously, there's no use worrying. The spies gave themselves away and likely got chased off or even captured in the chaos. We now know some of the secrets that Valette is hiding, so we're ahead there, too. It's been a very productive night.
That's an optimistic way of looking at it, I guess.
Once again, I try my best. Even still, he would feel more comfortable when they got back to Keep Venture. Perhaps it had been foolhardy to sneak away from the palace before hearing the details of what had happened, but Elland hadn't exactly been thinking carefully at the time. Besides, he had the previously arranged meeting with Felt to attend, and the chaos had made a perfect opportunity to slip away. The carriage slowly pulled up to the Venture gates.
You should go, Elland said, slipping out of the carriage. Take the books.
Jastis nodded, grabbing the sack, then bidding Elland farewell as he shut the carriage door. Elland waited as the carriage rolled back away from the gates, then he turned and walked the rest of the way to the keep, the surprised gate guards letting him pass with ease. The grounds were still ablaze with light. Guards were already waiting for him at the front of the keep, and a group of them rushed out into the mists to meet him and surround him.
My lord, your father—
Yes, Elland interrupted, sighing. I assume I'm to be taken to him immediately?
Yes, my lord.
Lead on, then, captain.
They entered through the Lord's entrance on the side of the building. Lord Strafventure stood in his study, speaking with a group of guard officers. Elland could tell from the pale faces that they had received a firm scolding, perhaps even threats of beatings. They were noblemen, so Venture couldn't execute them, but he was very fond of the more brutal disciplinary forms. Lord Venture dismissed the soldiers with a sharp gesture, then turned to Elland with hostile eyes. Elland frowned, watching the soldiers go. Everything all seemed a little too tense.
"Well?" Lord Venture demanded.
"Well, what?"
"Where have you been?"
"Oh, I left," Elland said offhandedly. Lord Venture sighed.
"Fine. Endanger yourself if you wish, boy. In a way, it's too bad that Mistborn didn't catch you. You could have saved me a great deal of frustration."
"Mistborn?" Elland asked, frowning. "What Mistborn?"
"The one that was planning to assassinate you," Lord Venture snapped.
Elland blinked in startlement. "So it wasn't just a spying team?"
"Oh, no,"
Venture said, smiling somewhat wickedly.
"An entire assassination team sent here after you and your friends."
Lord Ruler, Elland thought, realizing how foolish he had been to go out alone. "I didn't expect the House War to get so dangerous so quickly. At least not for me." "How do we know it was a Mistborn?" Elland asked, gathering his wits.
"Our guards managed to kill her," Straff said. "As she was fleeing."
Elland frowned. "A full Mistborn? Killed by common soldiers?"
"Archers," Lord Venture said. "Apparently they took her by surprise."
"And the man who fell through my skylight?" Elland asked.
"Dead," Lord Venture said. "Broken neck."
Elland frowned. "That man was still alive when we fled. What are you hiding, father?"
"The Mistborn. Anyone I know?"
"I'd say so," Lord Venture said, settling into his desk chair, not looking up. "It was Shan Alariel."
Elland froze in shock.
Shan, he thought, dumbfounded. They'd been engaged, and she'd never even mentioned that she was an allomancer.
That probably meant she'd been a plant all along. Perhaps House Alariel had planned to have Elland killed once an Alariel grandson was born to the house title.
"You're right, Jastis. I can't avoid politics by ignoring it. I've been a part of it all for much longer than I assumed."
His father was obviously pleased with himself. A high-profile member of House Alariel was dead on Venture grounds after trying to assassinate Elland. With such a triumph, Lord Venture would be insufferable for days. Elland sighed.
"Did we capture any of the assassins alive, then?"
Straff shook his head.
"One fell to the courtyard as he was trying to flee. He got away. He might have been Mistborn, too. We found one man dead on the roof, but we aren't sure if there were others in the team or not."
He paused.
"What?"
Elland asked, reading the slight confusion in his father's eyes.
"Nothing," Straff said, waving a dismissive hand. "Some of the guards claim there was a third Mistborn fighting the other two, but I doubt the reports. It wasn't one of ours."
Elland paused.
"A third Mistborn fighting the other two?
Maybe someone found out about the assassination and tried to stop it." Lord Venture snorted.
"Why would someone else's Mistborn try to protect you?"
"Maybe they just wanted to stop an innocent man from being murdered."
Lord Venture shook his head, laughing.
"You are an idiot, boy. You understand that, right?"
Elland flushed, then turned away. It didn't appear that Lord Venture wanted anything more, so Elland left. He couldn't go back to his rooms, not with the broken window and the guards, so he made his way to a guest bedroom, calling for a set of haze killers to watch outside his door and balcony, just in case. He prepared for bed, thinking about the conversation. His father was probably right about the third Mistborn. That just wasn't the way things worked.
"But that's the way it should be. The way it could be, maybe."
There were so many things Elland wished he could do. but his father was healthy and young for a lord of his power. It would be decades before Elend assumed the house title, assuming he even survived that long. He wished he could go to Valette, talk to her, explain his frustrations. She'd understand what he was thinking. For some reason, she always seemed to understand him better than others. And she's Ska. He couldn't get over the thought. He had so many questions, so many things he wanted to find out from her. Later, he thought as he climbed into bed. For now, focus on keeping the house together. His words to Valette in that area hadn't been false. He needed to make certain his family survived the house war. After that? Well, perhaps they could find a way to work around the lies and the scams. Though many Terrasmen express a resentment of Chlenium, there is also envy. I have heard the Pac-Men speak in wonder of the Chleni cathedrals, with their amazing stained-glass windows and broad halls. They also seem very fond of our fashion. Back in the cities, I saw that many young Terrasmen had traded in their furs and skins for well-tailored gentlemen's suits. 32. Two streets over from Clubs's shop was a building of unusual height compared with those surrounding it. It was some kind of tenement, Vin thought, a place to pack Ska families. She'd never been inside of it, however. She dropped a coin, then shot herself up along the side of the six-story building. She landed lightly on the rooftop, causing a figure crouching in the darkness to jump in surprise. "It's just me," Vin whispered, sneaking quietly across the sloped roof. Spook smiled at her in the night. As the crew's best tin eye, he usually got the most important watches. Recently, those were the ones during the early evening. That was the time when conflict among the great houses was most likely to turn to outright fighting. "Are they still going at it?" Vin asked quietly, flaring her tin, scanning the city. A bright haze shone in the distance, giving the mists a strange luminescence. Spook nodded, pointing toward the light. "Keep hasting. Illyrial soldiers with the attacking tonight." Vin nodded. Keep Hastings' destruction had been expected for some time. It had suffered a half-dozen raids from different houses during the last week. Allies withdrawing, finances wrecked, it was only a matter of time before it fell. Oddly, none of the houses attacked during the daytime. There was a feigned air of secrecy about the war, as if the aristocracy acknowledged the Lord Ruler's dominance and didn't want to upset him by resorting to daylight warfare. It was all handled at night, beneath a cloak of mists. "Wasing the want of this," Spook said. Vin paused. Spook, could you try to speak, normal?" Spook nodded toward a distant, dark structure in the distance. "The Lord Ruler, liking he wants the fighting." Vin nodded. Kelsier was right. There hasn't been much of an outcry from the Ministry or the Palace regarding the House War, and the garrison is taking its time getting back to Luthadel. The Lord Ruler expected the House War, and intends to let it run its course. Like a wildfire, left to blaze and renew a field. Except this time, as one fire died, another would start. Kelsier's attack on the city. "Assuming Marsh can find out how to stop the Steel Inquisitors. Assuming we can take the palace. And, of course, assuming Kelsier can find a way to deal with the Lord Ruler." Vin shook her head. She didn't want to think poorly of Kelsier, but she just didn't see how it was all going to happen. The garrison wasn't back yet, but reports said it was close, perhaps only a week or two out. Some noble houses were falling, but there didn't seem to be the air of general chaos that Kelsier had wanted. The final empire was strained, but she doubted that it would crack. However, maybe that wasn't the point. The crew had done an amazing job of instigating a house war. Three entire great houses were no more, and the rest were seriously weakened. It would take decades for the aristocracy to recover from their own squabbling.
We've done an amazing job, Vin decided. Even if we don't attack the palace, or if that attack fails, we'll have accomplished something wonderful.
With Marsha's intelligence about the ministry and Sazed's translation of the logbook, the rebellion would have new and useful information for future resistance. It wasn't what Kelsier had hoped for. It wasn't a complete toppling of the final empire. However, it was a major victory, one that the Ska could look to for years as a source of courage. And, with a start of surprise, Vin realized that she felt proud to have been part of it. Perhaps in the future she could help start a real rebellion, one in a place where the Ska weren't quite so beaten down. If such a place exists. Vin was beginning to understand that it wasn't just Luthadel and its soothing stations that made Ska subservient. It was everything. The obligators, the constant work in field and mill, the mindset encouraged by 1,000 years of oppression. There was a reason why Ska rebellions were always so small. The people knew, or thought they knew, that there was no fighting against the final empire. Even Vin, who had assumed herself a liberated thief, had believed the same. It had taken Kelsier's insane, over-the-top plan to convince her otherwise. Perhaps that was why he'd set such lofty goals for the crew. He'd known that only something this challenging would make them realize, in a strange way, that they could resist. Spook glanced at her. Her presence still made him uncomfortable.
Spook, Vin said. You know that Elend broke off his relationship with me.
Spook nodded, perking up slightly.
But, Vin said regretfully, I still love him. I'm sorry, Spook, but it's true.
He looked down, deflating.
It's not you, Vin said. Really, it isn't. It's just that... Well, you can't help who you love. Trust me, there are some people I really would rather not have loved. They didn't deserve it.
Spook nodded.
I understand. Can I still keep the handkerchief?
He shrugged.
Thank you, she said. It does mean a lot to me.
He looked up, staring out into the mists.
I'm nodding a fool. I knew it wasn't not to happen. I see things, Vin. I see lots of things.
She laid a comforting hand on his shoulder.
I see things.
An appropriate statement for a tin eye like him.
You've been an Allomancer for a long time? She asked.
Spook nodded.
Wasing the snap when I was 5. Barely even remember it. And since then you've been practicing with tin?
Mostly, he said.
Wasn't a good thing for me. Letting me see, letting me hear, letting me feel.
Any tips you can pass on? Vin asked hopefully. He paused thoughtfully, sitting by the edge of the slanted rooftop, 1 foot dangling over the side.
Tin burning. Nodding about the seeing. Wasing about the not seeing.
Vin frowned.
What do you mean? When burning, he said, everything comes. Lots of everything. Distractions here, there. Ifing the power of wants, ignoring the distractions of both.
If you want to be good at burning tin, she thought, translating as best she could, learn to deal with distraction. It isn't about what you see. It's about what you can ignore.
Interesting, Vin said thoughtfully.
Spook nodded.
When looking, seeing the mist and seeing the houses and feeling the wood and hearing the rats below. Choose one, and don't get distracted.
Good advice, Vin said. Spook nodded as a sound thumped behind them. They both jumped and ducked down, and Kelsier chuckled as he walked across the rooftop.
We really have to find a better way of warning people that we're coming up. Every time I visit a spy nest, I worry that I'm going to startle someone off the rooftop.
Bin stood, dusting off her clothing. She wore mist cloak, shirt, and trousers. It had been days since she'd worn a dress. She only put in token appearances at Mansion Renew. Kelsier was too worried about assassins to let her stay there for long.
At least we bought Kliss's silence, Vin thought, annoyed at the expense.
It's time?
She asked. Kelsier nodded.
Nearly so, at least. I want to stop somewhere on the way.
Vin nodded. For their second meeting, Marsh had chosen a location that he was supposedly scouting for the Ministry. It was a perfect opportunity to meet, since Marsh had an excuse to be in the building all night, ostensibly seeking for any allomantic activity nearby. He would have a soother with him for a good deal of the time, but there would be an opening near the middle of the night when Marsh figured he would have a good hour alone. Not much time if he had to sneak out and back, but plenty of time for a pair of stealthy Mistborn to pay him a quick visit. They bid farewell to Spook and pushed off into the night. However, they didn't travel the rooftops for long before Kelsier led them down onto the street, landing and walking to conserve strength and metals.
It's kind of odd, Vin thought, remembering her first night practicing allomancy with Kelsier. I don't even think of the empty streets as creepy anymore.
The cobblestones were slick from mist water, and the deserted street eventually disappeared into the distant haze. It was dark, silent, and lonely. Even the war hadn't changed very much. Soldier groups, when they attacked, went in clumps, striking quickly and trying to overrun the defenses of an enemy house. Yet despite the emptiness of the nighttime city, Vin felt comfortable in it. The mists were with her.
Vin, Kelsier said as they walked, I want to thank you.
She turned to him, a tall, proud figure in a majestic mist cloak.
Thank me? Why?
For the things you said about Mare. I've been thinking a lot about that day. About her. I don't know if your ability to see through copper clouds explains everything. But, well, given the choice, I'd rather believe that Mare didn't betray me.
Vin nodded, smiling. He shook his head ruefully.
It sounds foolish, doesn't it? As if all these years I've just been waiting for a reason to give in to self-delusion.
I don't know, Vin said. Once maybe I would have thought you a fool, but, well, that's kind of what trust is, isn't it? A willful self-delusion? You have to shut out that voice that whispers about betrayal, and just hope that your friends aren't going to hurt you.
Kelsier chuckled.
I don't think you're helping the argument any, Vin.
She shrugged.
Makes sense to me. Distrust is really the same thing, only on the other side. I can see how a person, given the choice between two assumptions, would choose to trust.
But not you, Kelsier asked. Vin shrugged again.
I don't know anymore.
Kelsier hesitated.
This Elend of yours, there's a chance that he was just trying to scare you into leaving the city, right? Perhaps he said those things for your own good.
Maybe, Vin said. But there was something different about him, about the way he looked at me. He knew I was lying to him, but I don't think he realized that I was Ska. He probably thought I was a spy from one of the other houses. Either way, he seemed honest in his desire to be rid of me.
Maybe you thought that because you were already convinced that he was going to leave you.
Vin
trailed off, glancing down at the slick, ashen street as they walked.
I don't know. And it's your fault, you know. I used to understand everything. Now it's all confused.
Yes, we've messed you up right properly, Kelsier said with a smile.
You don't seem bothered by the fact.
Nope, Kelsier said. Not a bit. Ah, here we are.
He stopped beside a large, wide building, probably another Ska tenement. It was dark inside. Ska couldn't afford lamp oil, and they would have put out the building's central hearth after preparing the evening meal.
This? Vin asked uncertainly.
Kelsier nodded, walking up to tap lightly on the door. To Vin's surprise, it opened hesitantly, a wiry Ska face peeking out into the mists.
"Lord Kelsier," the man said quietly.
"I told you I'd visit," Kelsier said, smiling. "Tonight seemed like a good time."
"Come in, come in," the man said, pulling the door open.
He stepped back, careful not to let any of the mist touch him, as Kelsier and Vin entered. Vin had been in Ska tenements before, but never before had they seemed so depressing. The smell of smoke and unwashed bodies was almost overpowering, and she had to extinguish her tin to keep from gagging. The wan light of a small coal stove showed a crowd of people packed together, sleeping on the floor. They kept the room swept of ash, but there was only so much they could do. Black stains still covered clothing, walls, and faces. There were few furnishings, not to mention far too few blankets to go around.
"I used to live like this," Vin thought with horror. "The crew lairs were just as packed, sometimes more so. This was my life."
People roused as they saw that they had a visitor. Kelsier had his sleeves rolled up, Vin noticed, and the scars on his arms were visible even by emberlight. They stood out starkly, running lengthwise up from his wrist, past his elbows, crisscrossing and overlapping. The whispers began immediately.
"A survivor! He's here! Kelsier, the Lord of the Mists!"
"That's a new one," Vin thought with a raised eyebrow. She stayed back as Kelsier smiled, stepping forward to meet the Ska. The people gathered around him with quiet excitement, reaching out to touch his arms and cloak. Others just stood and stared, watching him with reverence. "I come to spread hope," Kelsier said to them quietly. "House Hastings fell tonight." There were murmurs of surprise and awe. "I know many of you worked in the Hastings smithies and steel mills," Kelsier said. "And honestly, I cannot say what this means for you, but it is a victory for all of us. For a time at least, your men won't die before the forges or beneath the whips of Hastings taskmasters." There were murmurs through the small crowd, and one voice finally spoke the concern loud enough for Vin to hear.
"House Hastings is gone? Who will feed us?"
So frightened, Vin thought. "I was never like that, was I?" "I'll send you another shipment of food," Kelsier promised. "Enough to last you for a while, at least."
"You've done so much for us," another man said.
"Nonsense," Kelsier said. "If you wish to repay me, then stand up just a little straighter. Be a little less afraid. They can be beaten."
"By men like you, Lord Kelsier," a woman whispered, "but not by us."
"You'd be surprised," Kelsier said as the crowd began to make way for parents bringing their children forward. It seemed like everyone in the room wanted their sons to meet Kelsier personally. Vin watched with mixed feelings. The crew still had reservations regarding Kelsier's rising fame with the Ska, though they kept their word and remained silent.
"He really does seem to care for them," Vin thought, watching Kelsier pick up a small child. "I don't think it's just a show. This is how he is. He loves people. Loves the Ska. But it's more like the love of a parent for a child than it is like the love of a man for his equals."
Was that so wrong? He was, after all, a kind of father to the Ska. He was the noble lord they always should have had. Still, Vin couldn't help feeling uncomfortable as she watched the faintly illuminated dirty faces of those Ska families, their eyes worshipful and reverent. Kelsier eventually bid the group farewell, telling them he had an appointment. Vin and he left the cramped room, stepping out into blessedly fresh air. Kelsier remained quiet as they traveled toward Marsh's new soothing station, though he did walk with a bit more of a spring in his step. Eventually, Vin had to say something.
"You visit them often?"
Kelsier nodded. "At least a couple houses a night. It breaks up the monotony of my other work."
Killing noblemen and spreading false rumors, Vin thought. Yes, visiting the Ska would be a nice break.
The meeting place was only a few streets away. Kelsier paused in a doorway as they approached, squinting in the dark night. Finally, he pointed at a window just faintly lit. Marsh said he'd leave a light burning if the other obligators were gone.
Window or stairs? Vin asked.
Stairs, Kelsier said. The door should be unlocked, and the Ministry owns the entire building. It will be empty.
Kelsier was right on both counts.
The building didn't smell musty enough to be abandoned, but the bottom few floors were obviously unused. Vin and he quickly climbed up the stairwell.
Marsh should be able to tell us the Ministry reaction to the house war, Kelsier said as they reached the top floor.
Lantern light flickered through the door at the top, and he pushed it open, still speaking.
Hopefully that garrison won't get back too quickly. The damage is mostly done, but I'd like the war to go on for...
He froze in the doorway, blocking Vin's view. She flared pewter and tin immediately, falling to a crouch, listening for attackers. There was nothing. Just silence.
No,
Kelsier whispered. Then Vin saw the trickle of dark red liquid seeping around the side of Kelsier's foot. It pooled slightly, then began to drip down the first step.
Oh, Lord Ruler.
Kelsier stumbled into the room. Vin followed, but she knew what she'd see. The corpse lay near the center of the chamber, flayed and dismembered, the head completely crushed. It was barely recognizable as human. The walls were sprayed red.
Could one body really produce this much blood?
It was just like before, in the basement of Cayman's lair, only with a single victim.
Inquisitor,
Vin whispered. Kelsier, heedless of the gore, stumbled to his knees beside Marsh's corpse. He raised a hand as if to touch the skinless body, but remained frozen there, stunned.
Kelsier, Vin said urgently. This was recent. The Inquisitor could still be near.
He didn't move.
Kelsier,
Vin snapped. Kelsier shook, looking around. His eyes met hers, and lucidity returned. He stumbled to his feet.
Window,
Vin said, rushing across the room. She paused, however, when she saw something sitting on a small desk beside the wall. A wooden table leg, tucked half-hidden beneath a blank sheet of paper. Vin snatched it as Kelsier reached the window. He turned back, looking over the room one last time, then jumped out into the night.
Farewell, Marsh,
Vin thought regretfully, following.
I think that the Inquisitors suspect me, Doxson read.
The paper, a single sheet recovered from inside the table leg, was clean and white, free from the blood that stained Kelsier's knees and the bottom of Vin's cloak. Doxson continued, reading as he sat at Clubs's kitchen table.
I've been asking too many questions, and I know they sent at least one message to the corrupt obligator who supposedly trained me as an acolyte. I thought to seek out the secrets that the rebellion has always needed to know. How does the Ministry recruit Mistborn to be Inquisitors? Why are Inquisitors more powerful than regular Allomancers? What, if any, are their weaknesses? Unfortunately, I've learned next to nothing about the Inquisitors, though the politicking within the regular Ministry ranks continues to amaze me. It's like the regular obligators don't even care about the world outside except for the prestige they earn by being the most clever or successful in applying the Lord Ruler's dictates. The Inquisitors, however, are different. They are far more loyal to the Lord Ruler than the regular obligators, and this is perhaps part of the dissension between the two groups. Regardless, I feel that I am close. They do have a secret, Kelsier, a weakness. I'm sure of it. The other obligators whisper of it, though none of them know it. I fear that I've prodded too much. The Inquisitors tail me, watch me, ask after me. So, I prepare this note. Perhaps my caution is unnecessary. Perhaps not.
Doxson looked up.
That's all it says.
Kelsier stood at the far side of the kitchen, back to the cupboard, reclining in his usual position. But there was no levity in his posture this time. He stood with arms folded, head slightly bowed. His disbelieving grief appeared to have vanished, replaced with another emotion, one Vin had sometimes seen smoldering darkly behind his eyes, usually when he spoke of the nobility. She shivered despite herself. Standing as he was, she was suddenly aware of his clothing, dark gray mist cloak, long-sleeved black shirt, charcoal trousers. In the night, the clothing was simply camouflage. In the lit room, however, the black colors made him look menacing. He stood up straight, and the room grew tense.
"Tell Renu to pull out," Kelsier said softly, his voice like iron. "He can use the planned exit story, that of a retreat back to his family lands because of the house war. But I want him gone by tomorrow. Send a thug and a tin-eye with him as protection. But tell him to abandon his canal boats one day out of the city, then return to us." Doxson paused, then glanced at Vin and the others.
"Okay."
"Marsh knew everything, Dox," Kelsier said. "They broke him before they killed him. That's how Inquisitors work." He let the words hang. Vin felt a chill. The lair was compromised.
"To the backup lair, then?" Doxson asked. "Only you and I knew its location."
Kelsier nodded firmly. "I want everyone out of this shop, apprentices included, in 15 minutes. I'll meet you at the backup lair in 2 days.
Doxson looked up at Kelsier, frowning.
2 days? Kel, what are you planning?
Kelsier strode over to the door. He threw it open, letting in the mist, then glanced back at the crew with eyes as hard as any Inquisitor's spikes.
"They hit me where it couldn't have hurt worse. I'm going to do likewise."
Waylon pushed himself in the darkness, feeling his way through the cramped caverns, forcing his body through cracks nearly too small. He continued downward, searching with his fingers, ignoring his numerous scrapes and cuts.
"Must keep going. Must keep going."
His remaining sanity told him that this was his last day. It had been 6 days since his last success. If he failed a seventh time, he would die.
"Must keep going."
He couldn't see. He was too far beneath the surface to catch even a reflected glimpse of sunlight. But even without light, he could find his way. There were only two directions, up and down. Movements to the side were unimportant, easily disregarded. He couldn't get lost as long as he kept moving down. All the while, he quested with his fingers, seeking the telltale roughness of budding crystal. He couldn't return this time, not until he'd been successful. Not until...
Must keep going.
His hands brushed something soft and cold as he moved. A corpse, stuck rotting between two rocks. Waylon moved on. Bodies weren't uncommon in the tight caverns. Some of the corpses were fresh. Most were simply bones. Often Waylon wondered if the dead ones weren't really the lucky ones.
Must keep going.
There wasn't really time in the caverns. Usually he returned above to sleep, though the surface held taskmasters with whips, they also had food. It was meager, barely enough to keep him alive, but it was better than the starvation that would come from staying below too long.
Must keep.
He froze. He lay with his torso pinched in a tight rift in the rock, and had been in the process of wiggling his way through. However, his fingers, always searching, even when he was barely conscious, had been feeling the walls. And they'd found something. His hand quivered with anticipation as he felt the crystal buds.
Yes, yes, that was them.
They grew in a wide circular pattern on the wall. They were small at the edges, but got gradually bigger near the center. At the direct middle of the circular pattern, the crystals curved inward, following a pocket-like hollow in the wall.
Here the crystals grew long, each one having a jagged, sharp edge, like teeth lining the maw of a stone beast. Taking a breath, praying to the Lord Ruler, Waylon rammed his hand into the fist-sized circular opening. The crystals ripped his arm, tearing long, shallow gashes in his skin. He ignored the pain, forcing his arm in further, up to his elbow, searching with his fingers for... There! His fingers found a small rock at the center of the pocket, a rock formed by the mysterious drippings of the crystals. A Hathsin geode. He grasped it eagerly, pulling it out, ripping his arm again as he withdrew it from the crystal-lined hole. He cradled the small rock sphere, breathing heavily with joy. Another 7 days. He would live another 7 days. Before hunger and fatigue could weaken him further, Waylon began the laborious climb back upward. He squeezed through crevasses, climbed up juttings in walls. Sometimes he had to move to the right or left until the ceiling opened up, but it always did. There were really only two directions, up and down. He kept a wary ear out for others. He had seen climbers killed before, slain by younger, stronger men who hoped to steal a geode. Fortunately, he met nobody. It was good. He was an older man, old enough to know that he never should have tried to steal food from his plantation lord. Perhaps he had earned his punishment. Perhaps he deserved to die in the pits of Hathsin. "But I won't die today," he thought, finally smelling sweet fresh air. It was night above. He didn't care. The mists didn't bother him anymore. Even beatings didn't bother him much anymore. He was just too tired to care. Waylon began to climb out of the crack, one of dozens in the small flat valley known as the Pits of Hathsin. Then he froze. A man stood above him in the night. He was dressed in a large cloak that appeared to have been shredded to strips. The man looked at Waylon, quiet and powerful in his black clothing. Then he reached down. Waylon cringed. The man, however, grabbed Waylon's hand and pulled him out of the crack. "Go," the man said quietly in the swirling mists. "Most of the guards are dead. Gather as many prisoners as you can and escape this place. You have a geode?" Waylon cringed again, pulling his hand toward his chest. "Good," the stranger said. "Break it open. You'll find a nugget of metal inside. It is very valuable. Sell it to the underground in whatever city you eventually find yourself. You should earn enough to live on for years. Go quickly. I don't know how long you have until an alarm is raised." Waylon stumbled back, confused.
Who are you?"
"I am what you will be soon," the stranger said, stepping into the rift. The ribbons of his enveloping black cloak billowed around him, mixing with the mists as he turned toward Waylon. "I am a survivor." Kelsier looked down, studying the dark scar on the rock, listening as the prisoner scrambled away in the distance. "And so I return," Kelsier whispered. His scars burned and memories returned. Memories of months spent squeezing through cracks, of ripping his arms on crystalline knives, of seeking each day to find a geode, just one, so that he could live on. Could he really go back down in